For WXXI, this is Connections, filling in for Evan Dawson. I'm Gino Finelli. Today's connection was made on April 20th of 2024. On that day, Governor Kathy Hochul signed New York's Good Cause eviction protections into law. Good Cause, like the name implies, ensures the landlord has to have a valid reason to evict a tenant, guarantees the right to renew a lease, and limits rental increases to 10% or 5% of the consumer price index, whichever is less. While nine cities across the state have opted into these protections, Rochester has yet to vote on a Good Cause bill. Council President Miguel Melendez is planning on releasing a report on Good Cause today, which will guide the legislation will look like in Rochester. That report has yet to be released. Joining us to talk about Good Cause and how the bill would affect tenants, I'm joined by Liesl Coleman, organizer with the Rochester Citywide Tenant Union. Liesl, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Gino.
Keisha Ward is a tenant currently facing a non-renewal eviction. Keisha, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Rochester City Council member Kim Smith, who was the architect of one of the original Good Cause bills, go before City Council in 2022. So, Kim, thanks for being here.
Good to be here, Gino.
So before we start talking about the nuances of this bill, the Good Cause proposal, some of the issues surrounding tenants and rental increases, I want to start with who this actually affects, and that's tenants like Keisha. So, Keisha, I want to give you a chance to tell your story and where you're at right now. Your next court date, you said, is November 21st.
Yes.
So why don't you walk us through where you are in the process right now?
So right now in the process, I have received an attorney. Thanks to some of the help from the tenant defense program. We go back. I believe the attorney, she signed us up for or she asked for a bench trial, but I would like to go for a jury trial instead. I've given her all my supporting evidence. Right now I am still looking for a place because you never know what's going to happen. The rent prices have actually skyrocketed, so what is affordable before for me is no longer attainable, and what's out there in my price range is not safe for my daughter, and it causes health issues for myself and my youngest child. So right now I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place.
How long have you been in your home for?
December would have made it 2 years, so I've been there a year and 10, almost 11 months, yes.
So I want to pick up on what you're saying there. Rochester is experiencing what a lot of the state's experiencing, and what a lot of the nation's experiencing with just spikes constantly in housing costs. For example, of that, between 2020 and 2024, the price of a one-bedroom apartment, the fair market rent has increased by 35%. That's according to the Department of Housing and Urban Development. A one-bedroom apartment in Rochester, fair market rent, so that's in the 40th percentile, went from $775 to $1,050 over the course of 4 years. And that trajectory doesn't seem to necessarily be slowing down. If you actually look at the data year over year, it's a consistent trend upward. And Liesl, I'll turn to you on this. I mean, you talk to a lot of tenants, and what are you hearing from them at this backdrop of there not being these kind of tenant protections in place and this seemingly exponential increase in how much rent costs? What are you hearing from people?
Yeah, I mean, so every day we get calls about how either landlords are explicitly raising the rent by large amounts. I had someone who recently got a 33% rent increase, and good cause would the current rate would allow for 8.4% in upstate. So we're seeing this isn't like small increases that are happening to people. We're seeing huge, massive increases all across Rochester in all different like income brackets, but especially in our poorest conditions and our most like vulnerable populations, there is just simply no place to go. So people are doubled up with family. We're seeing a massive increase in holdover evictions because people don't normally, when you get a holdover eviction, people try to find someplace else, but they simply can't find someplace that meets the conditions that they need. So people are telling us every day that they're getting kicked out, there's no place to go, and they're not getting a reason why they're getting kicked out. But we know the reason is often greed.
And for those listening, a holdover eviction applies to any eviction that's not non-payment. So that can be non-renewal. It can be for in some cases, the removal of bad tenants. But I think the most common case that you see, and if you look at state data, there is a consistent trajectory that holdover evictions proportionally are outpacing non-renewal evictions and non-payment evictions. Having talked to a lot of people that are involved in the legal side of that, the consistent trend seems to be that non-renewals are increasing. Is that something that you're seeing as well?
Absolutely. And we're even seeing that on talks that they have on panels, landlords are admitting that it's a lot easier right now to go for a holdover eviction than it is a non-payment because of things like the past of the ERAP money and people getting money to pay off their back rent. So landlords are openly admitting that they're using this strategy because you do not need a reason whatsoever to kick someone out of their home currently. So they know that this strategy is more foolproof than a non-payment strategy right now.
So let's go into a little bit of the nuance of the Rochester's good cause proposal as it stands. There was a proposal released back in, I believe it was July. It is pretty much boilerplate to what the state law is. And the way the state law is set up is there's two components that are allowed to be altered. That would be the number of units that a property owner owns that makes them qualify for good cause protections. So in the state law, it's 10 or more. Under the law, a municipality can choose to lower or raise that. So places like Ithaca that passed their own good cause protections had lowered it down to, I believe, one unit or more. So what does that mean? Back in August, I did some data analysis on what that would actually play out and look at. And what we found was if the 10-unit proposal, the proposal that's currently sitting before City Council, since the new report hasn't out, so this is the most recent one, that would exclude about 60% of the units in Rochester from good cause protections. And Kim, I'll turn to you on that. If that's the case, if we go forward with that boilerplate version of the law that exempts most of the units in the city, most of the rental units that are available, do you think it will have that much of an impact? Will it make that much of a difference as far as the kind of trend in housing issues that we're seeing in the city right now?
Absolutely. And I think the government, first, let me acknowledge the expert in this space, which would be Keisha, because Keisha is directly impacted by the decisions that we are making. Mm-hmm. So let me acknowledge that first and the excellent work of Liesl and the Citywide Tenant Union. So the state of New York really is responsible for this housing crisis and their inaction, and it has trickled down to local government. And so we have a lot that we have to account for, because as we have been remiss for granting good cause, Liesl, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been on the table for at least 5 years.
So, we've been fighting at the state level since it was introduced in 2019. That's correct?
Yes. So since 2019. So since 2019, we have seen increases in evictions, increases in homelessness, and we have a lot to make up for. And so now we are in a moment of opportunity where we can solve for a lot of those issues. And so we want to create the most inclusive piece of legislation that we possibly can. And so really attacking this from the standpoint of making good cause eviction eligible starting at one unit is what's going to work best for the residents of Rochester.
What kind of support do you think that has on council right now?
I'm not sure. What I am waiting for is the president's report to come out. So the president stated from the beginning that he wanted to put forth his due diligence and make sure he looked at this from a comprehensive perspective. The perspective of the tenant, the perspective of the landlord, the perspective of the administration. So he wanted to look at this from all angles. Now, I think the data speaks for itself. Looking at the increases, as I mentioned, in homelessness, the increases in eviction, and as the citywide tenant union continued to bring to our attention during Speak to Council, that just from July till now, 211 more eviction cases have entered. We would be remiss if we did not do this. So I am, hopefully I'm not feeling, it's not blind optimism. Hopefully I'm not being naive, but I think that level of comprehensive due diligence can only result in full support of an amended version of the good cause eviction law.
It's a tough situation to look at because, as Keisha, as you mentioned, looking around for an apartment right now, looking out for another place to go, it's tough out there. I think anyone listening that has had to look for a new place to live at this point in time knows how difficult it is in Rochester right now. And with that many more people being removed from their housing, it begs the question of where do they go? And what are the options there? And I want to turn to you on that. I mean, what are your options if this continues the way it's going?
So my options right now that's been offered to me is find a place, which, like you said, is very hard. My mother's been very supportive. She's actually offered to take me and my two children into her two-bedroom apartment. But my mom is in what is considered affordable housing. I'm not going to touch that one right now. The other thing is, if it happens and I have to move, I've been told you can always go to Motel 6. But again, I have a child who is very high-functioning autistic, but as everybody knows, that is a social disability. So she misses cues, and she doesn't really pick up when people mean her harm. She's very intelligent. Like, if you look at her, you can't tell that there's something different about her. But my child is autistic, and she misses those things. Like, even a simple conversation with me is very hard. So right now, like, looking for something, I have to take in several factors. I have to take in the fact that I am a cancer survivor, and I am currently still fighting cancer. I am on medication for the rest of my life. So that means I can't be around mice. I can't be around roaches, which I found out I'm allergic to also, thanks to a lovely incident at a house I went to see. My youngest daughter is asthmatic. So when you take all of that in, my options begin to dwindle. You take in the fact that I have to look at how much it costs, and then you go in to see, and I look for stuff that's different. Like, I look for droppings and things like that. So those nice $1,300 and $1,200 price houses, those are really crappy. Like, they don't fit me. So it's either I take something really crappy, or I kind of double up, or I take the chance and fight this out in court. I fought cancer, so I don't see why fighting a person would be that much harder. I could be wrong, but in this instance, like, this didn't happen until our genie sent us a second letter saying, you know, cut down the bushes, we're going to find you. It didn't happen until I called about my electricity. It didn't call until I had to report them for violation on the house after I asked several times, please fix this, please fix this. Like they said in the news, I am an amazing tenant. I pay my rent on time. I don't withhold it. I did that once, and that was because there was a mouse that got into the house. When they come out, I have video where they've actually inspected my house and everything. So it's like one of those things. For me, this is personal because I raise my kids there. This is where my kids come home to say, Mom, something's wrong. I would love to stay in the house. I've even tried to reach out to the owners and say, hey, can we talk this over? Is there a possibility of us actually trying to buy the house? I got no response. So again, my options are very, very small. It's either take something really, really crappy or fight this out.
It begs the question, too, of we as a city and county, I think should have a kind of focus on, one, tamping down on homelessness in general, but also when we do house people, putting them in housing that has some dignity to it. And when you mention Motel 6, which I've spent a good amount of time at, I can't think of anything that lines up less than housing people with dignity than putting them into the Motel 6 right now. It's a place that is infested. It's got more issues than you could probably count. I've spent a good amount of time seeing a lot of the issues that are happening there. And I think it's easy for a lot of people that are outside of seeing these things to be like, well, we have a place to go. We have a safety net for when people fall through the cracks, oftentimes by no fault of their own and sometimes by fault of their own. And I don't think it makes any difference in whether or not they deserve to live in those conditions. Actually seeing those conditions is a whole different story. They are bad. I'll turn to you, Lisa, on that. What does our safety net look like for people that are housing insecure? Where do they end up, and is it adequate? Is the question here.
Yeah, thanks, Gino, for the question. It's not adequate. I mean, people end up on the streets. People end up in shelters. The shelters are so full. It's taking months, if not years, for people to get out of these shelters. Families are doubling up in houses that are way too small. They are choosing not to call about conditions in their apartments because they know that they could get a no-cause eviction and just be put out onto the street. So every time that I'm in eviction court, I sit there while they list off the 40 cases that day, and most of the tenants, sometimes they don't even show up because they know what the fate is of housing court. The fate is a move-out date that most people know that they will not be able to make, an eviction warrant on their door, and then potentially going to a shelter, a family member's home, or onto the street. That's the reality of what's happening to our families every single day in Rochester and what could be prevented with good cause eviction protections.
So the past couple of years, I've reported a lot on homeless issues in the city. And on this show, we've had multiple conversations about what's happening in the shelter system. And you ask any person who is actively involved in the shelter system, they will tell you the same thing that's been happening over the past couple of years. The people entering the system are not the quote unquote traditional homeless. It's families. It's people that are entering the system for the first time. It's people that you would not expect to end up in shelters, and that's because every other safety net has fallen through. And we're specifically talking about good cause today, but all of these things are so tightly interconnected that looking at any of these issues in a vacuum, I think, is a disservice to the real chain of events that happens when a person becomes housing insecure. Kim, back in 2022, as we mentioned at the top of the hour, you and two other council members had proposed Rochester's own version of Good Cause, and that bill ultimately failed. But it does have a lot of similarities to the bill that's on the table, both from the state level and what potentially will be coming on the table in Rochester. But I wanted to get a sense from you of what you were looking at then with the issues that were happening in housing in the city and what the situation is now. Has it gotten worse?
Of course. And I think evidence that it has gotten worse is exactly what Keisha mentioned. It hurts my heart, and I'm assuming hurts the heart of all of us listening, that Keisha even feels that she has to sit here and justify why she cannot live with roaches, with rats, or in substandard housing. That makes absolutely no sense, and it is evident that Rochester is not well. This housing system was built on a system of profit, where we prioritized profit over people. We legislated our way into that system, and now we have to legislate our way out. And so what we knew then in 2019 is that we needed, was that the year that we presented?
2022.
Thank you. Sorry. So what we knew then is we needed an emergency response, and we needed it right away, because the numbers, although they're much different now because they're higher now, we knew we needed something then immediately. And so we put forth what was currently in existence. But we know more now legally than we know then because of the other nine jurisdictions across the state who have fought, battled, and got this done.
The other cities that got this done, they did it relatively quickly. Most of them did it over the summer. I believe Ithaca was the first one, if I want to say that was in July or August. What is taking so long here? What makes it more complicated here to do it?
I honestly believe that Rochester is segregated. Rochester battles with racism, and people come into Rochester targeting our vulnerable communities. They know that they can come into Rochester under an LLC, buy up property, rent it out as is, not do a damn thing for the upkeep, and not be accountable.
Mm-hmm. Keisha, does that sound familiar to you?
It does sound familiar. When I was working before, I remember going down to one of the auctions where they had, and it was a bunch of normal people, like your neighbors you saw there when they were purchasing some of the property. And I remember the last one right before my diagnosis came, and I was going to buy a property for my kids and everything. I'm sorry, it was right before my treatment started. I was going to buy us a house at the auction. And a cousin of mine's actually does that. But when we were there, it was so many business people there. I watched as normal people, and I say normal, like, you know, your neighbor who you know works at, like, the schools or something like that, they walked out because the prices were ridiculously high. Like, if something was going for, like, $500 in back taxes, it was now going for $2,000 and $3,000, and people were shaking their head about how, you know, bad it was. Under the LLC, like, I've looked up several people, and then when you get onto a certain part of it for the city, hundreds of property comes up, and you click that property, and there's a different name for an LLC. Like, there's a LLC loophole with what they're trying to bring to the table now. And me personally, like, if you're telling me I can only have this amount under an LLC, okay, well, that's one LLC. Let me get a second LLC so I can have this amount of houses. And I'm always going to skip it, and I'm going to be in that loophole because now you've told me I could only have this many under there. So that's kind of a really bad thing that I would really like to see President Melendez work towards. But as far as people coming in and being segregated, yeah, you got that going every day. And I think the property part of, you know, being owned by investors, I agree with Kim.
Lisa, I was wondering if you could, the LLC portion of this, if you can explain a little bit of how the tenant union has been approaching that. I've seen you guys at council so many times bringing this issue to the table. Could you explain some of your concerns about that portion of it?
Yeah, I mean, so just going back to your original point, Gino, of how quickly these other nine cities have done this, most of the other nine cities, actually all of the nine cities, have done the one unit here. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they've chosen to do this and the reason why we're so passionate about it is because the city has a website where you can look up the owner of your building. The problem is that those properties aren't always connected, and it's not very easy to tell for the average person how many units their landlord owns in New York State, right? So I can look up in Rochester and still not know how many units my landlord has, and they could have other places in New York State that I would have no possibility of knowing. So the LLC loophole, what it does is it really creates this opportunity for landlords to get around the system that is being created by good cause eviction protections. In order to ensure that we have the most coverage and the most accountability from landlords, we need to amend the LLC loophole to include one unit across New York State. This is what all nine of the other cities have done, and it's the most surefire way to protect the most people. Unfortunately, we all know that out-of-state, out-of-town landlords are buying up our city in more and more waves of large prices. And if we don't past the LLC loophole, we're just going to continue to see that huge amount of investor cash and not going back to our community.
So, yeah, I can say from journalist perspective, Rochester has a excellent property data portal. It has great data that you can get about properties across the city pretty easily. But to the point, the one thing that stands in the way is LLCs. Mm-hmm. If an owner buys property in different names, gets a new DBA, and just keeps buying properties in that way, it is extremely difficult to track how many properties that person actually owns, who the actual human being that owns the properties are, and what kind of issues they're having. When you see that some owners have across their 10, 15, 20, 30 properties have hundreds of code violations, they could potentially have another LLC that has even more code violations, but it's very difficult to aggregate it if you don't know who is behind the different LLCs. And that makes it a little bit challenging. Kim, is that something that's being discussed at council at this point about addressing the LLC portion of how property owners could use that to skirt the good cause coverage if it goes through with the one unit exemption?
So the LLC issue, I think, is in the forefront of everyone's conversation. It's at the forefront of the conversation of the administration, of council, of the neighborhood and business development agency. It's in the forefront of the conversation with the Rochester Housing Task Force. So that is the good news. The challenging news is Rochester is still conservative and believes in incremental change. So the bold solutions that we need to take to create these loopholes are not happening. It is politically safe to do incremental changes, and that is exactly what is happening. But in the midst of those incremental changes, we see what's happening. We hear Keisha's story, and Keisha is not alone.
I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear you say that Rochester is an all-Democrat city council, and I think from the outside, people look at it, they're like, oh, look at the liberal city council in Rochester. But you're saying it's too conservative to actually move forward with legislation like this.
It's neoliberal. And mm-hmm. when you think about, Gino, there's a big difference between liberal and progressive. So liberal is really based on belief, how people feel, what they see. And everyone on council will agree that housing is a human right. But what we disagree on oftentimes is the progress that needs to happen and at the rate in which we progress in order to solve for some of these issues. So unless we have it, and we're witnessing this across the country, across the state, and in local government, it is not enough to have Democratic leadership. We've had Democratic leadership for centuries as we have been dealing with these crises. What we need is progressive leadership ready to take progressive action.
How close to that do you think we are?
Give me a scale.
Of 1 to 10.
3.
So at that backdrop, it makes it feel like there's some defeatism happening there, that there doesn't seem that much promise that there could be wide sweeping change that could happen to actually benefit most people in the city. Let's actually go around on that, because I would like to get all of your thoughts. And I'll start with you, Liso, of you've been around the tenant union for a long time now. Do you think anything has changed, and do you have any optimism that things are going to actually improve as we spoke about the eviction numbers for holdovers increasing? They're about double where they were pre-pandemic, and the price of housing going up significantly over the past 4 years. Do you have any optimism that these things are going to improve?
I do. And the reason that I have optimism is not necessarily the makeup of council, but is the strength of the people that are in this community. Power concedes nothing without a demand. The people have been clear. 85% of the people that came to the forums were in favor of good cause eviction protections. I think that if we're not seeing what we need to see from our leadership in our city, then it's our job to work to elect the leadership that we want. So I do have hope, not necessarily hope that with this current set of council members, we're going to pass the sweeping changes, but that Rochester is waking up to what we actually need. And like Kim said, that's bold change. It is not accepting the status quo anymore. So I'm looking forward to seeing, to continuing to see who ends up running for council next year. And I have hope because I have faith in the working class of Rochester.
Keisha, you're looking down the barrel of court in a couple weeks or 2 weeks. How are you feeling about where things are going to land?
I'm kind of stuck in the middle. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful that there's change coming around, that the powers to be actually take into consideration people like me. Not everyone asked to be in this situation, but I also kind of lost some hope because President Melendez has been dragging his feet. I've spoken to him several times. I've asked him several times, could you please tell me where you stand? Could you please show me some support? I've gotten messages like, oh, I'll give you a call, and they never came. Several others have done the same thing. I started this back in June, and it is now November, and every time I turn around, it's I'm going to bring something, and there's nothing that's there. And during that time, like it's been said, 211 people have gone to court and been evicted. So am I hopeful? Yes. Do I see a change before something happens to me or at the end of the year? No, I think we're going to be looking at this barrel again in January, and it's going to be said, the report's going to come out. And if it does get passed, I don't think it's going to be the strongest version. So I'm hoping for a new set of city council members, someone more progressive. And not everyone on the council, I think, is a holdup. I just don't think they have the right amount of support from the people on the council.
So before we take our first break, I'm going to take the first call of the hour from Lisa in Rochester.
Hi. Gino, I want to thank you for the coverage you've done of this really complicated issue. I'm inclined to think that we absolutely need local laws to deal with the stemming the tide, even though there are issues of private equity and, you know, and investment income, particularly if people from the suburbs who are buying city homes to turn into short-term rentals, even in places like the South Wedge. And you know, I wonder if there's going to be a program that deals with that question. I heard a state senator, I think it was on Connections this week, raise that issue of private equity and how it's affecting our housing crisis. But on this issue, thank you for covering it so closely, because we can do something to at least help on that level. And this kind of discussion helps people understand it.
Well, thank you. So, yeah, I think that's a question on how private investment has impacted the housing ecosystem in Rochester. Kim, I'll ask you about that. I mean, we saw this a lot during COVID, of a lot of properties being bought up in the city. The odds of, you know, your typical first-time home buyer buying a property during 2020 and 2021 in the city of Rochester, it was difficult, very, very hard. I tried to do it. I couldn't do it. So what effect do you think that's having on the housing ecosystem here?
There's so much happening, and especially with the housing crisis in Rochester, that this is just one piece of it. So first, let me go back and thank Lisa for her statement and her question, the question that is provoked, because it sounds like she's looking at this from pretty much a community perspective and how what happens on one front impacts us all. So no one is distant from this issue. So what I can tell you is a document about short-term rentals just got passed through Council. And so I am in the process of reading up on that. But I can tell you that that is becoming a part of the conversation. Not sure where we are going to go towards that end yet, but it's on the table.
So we're going to take our first break of the hour and come back, and we can talk more about what the future looks like and what other things can be measures can be taken beyond just good cause.
Coming up in our second hour, Gino hosts a conversation about the changing craft beer industry in our region. For many years, it was growth, growth, growth. But now there's been closures, there's been downsizing, and companies are trying to get creative about finding new models to stay in business, to grow. And we're going to take a look at what's going on in craft beer next hour.
And we're back on Connections. I just dropped my hat. We're talking about good cause, eviction protections, and the potential of what they would look like in the city of Rochester when they're passed. And before we took a break, we were talking about private equity and the impact of housing investment in the city of Rochester. And Lisa, I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit about how that impacts the housing ecosystem here and renters in particular.
Yeah, in Rochester and across the country, since the 2008 foreclosure crisis, we have seen a massive shift in who owns our homes in this country. So single home ownership is down by massive amounts. We're seeing that the majority of buildings across the country are being owned by these giant LLCs who are not even making the majority of their rent based on majority of their money based on the rent, but instead are making their money on the speculative market about how much the rent could future be. And if we don't have any limits put in place, then that speculation is exponential. So what we're seeing is our homes aren't being valued as pieces of the community, as things that are going to keep a family in their home and let them live next to their neighbors. Instead, they're being seen as a price tag by Wall Street. And this trend is continuing to exacerbate the housing crisis that we've seen in Rochester. And because of our low market values, we are seeing an absolutely stunning increase because people are looking all over the country to buy in Rochester. We had a landlord a couple of years ago from New Orleans. He bought 177 properties in one go, most of them single family homes. Those are families that are not in the hands of people in Rochester.
And you can see that pretty clearly if you look at a lot of the housing data, that there's a lot of investors that buy a big patches of properties at a single time, sometimes at foreclosure. Sometimes they just see a part of the city that has a lot of very low priced houses that they can buy up. And then some of them, we've actually written about a couple of them that, you know, 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, are rated some of the worst landlords in the city. Their places are falling apart. And it's, you put a bunch of money into an investment that you didn't plan to take care of. And I don't think all property owners do that, but I think there is no doubt that there are some that do. Before we came back from the break, Keisha, you mentioned your landlord. Would you like to talk a little bit about them?
So my landlord lives in California in an almost $7 million home. I think the square footage is almost 4,000 square feet, and it's 5 bedrooms, 4 baths. So, yeah, my landlord has no idea probably what the conditions are in my neighborhood or in on my side of town. But my rent is $1,600 compared to my neighbor's mortgage. I pay 3 times more than what she pays for her mortgage. Her mortgage is like $460. We were teachers together, and it's ridiculous. But I get making a profit. But to be told it's, you know, your business, it's one of those things like, you live in a $7 million home. How much can I possibly be bringing you for business?
So we're going to take another call from Maria in Rochester. Hi, Maria. Hi, Maria. Are you there?
Hello. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. So I've heard through the grapevine that President Melendez really wants to have something passed by the end of the year. And I was hoping to hear from the panelists, how much do you feel that this is actually based on wanting to protect tenants and more about wanting the neoliberals on council specifically to come across as caring about tenants when the data directly disproves that. Like Councilmember Smith said, the data speaks for itself. Thank you.
Thank you. Kim, I'll let you answer that. I'm going to get you in trouble.
Wow. Maria just put it all on the table. I would hope that this is about the well-being of the city of Rochester residents. I cannot speak to the intentions of everyone on council, but I can say this open, honestly, and I hope that President Melendez accepts this in the spirit in which it is given. My individual conversations with President Melendez has always been about concern in addressing the housing crisis. From day one, one of our first conversations, what is it that we need to do to address housing in Rochester? I would like to think that the president is coming from a standpoint of what the residents of Rochester need. I think that there is also a ton of pressure coming at him from real estate developers, from more conservative council members that he has had to contend with, and that is why it has taken a while for him to do his due diligence to come up with this report to support whatever position that he has chosen to take. So I would like to think that we have a president who is concerned about the residents of Rochester. The other conversations that I cannot speak to any other council member. I can speak to Council Member Lightfoot. We know all of the work that he put in terms of the housing assessments. Hopefully he's coming from a place of care and concern, but I have no idea where he stands on good cause eviction. I cannot speak for the other council members outside of Council Member Martin and Lupien, who have been on the ground with the people fighting this fight.
And not to speak for Miguel, but I will say that I've been in conversation with him for months on this. And the reason he's not here today was just a scheduling issue. We invited him and he wanted to make it. It was just something that didn't line up. That happens. People get busy. But I don't want to give the impression that the council president has been a brick wall on this. He has been open,
yes,
very open to conversation and very candid about this. And again, as a journalist, I don't want to read people's intentions. I don't get the sense that he is talking out of one side of his mouth and meaning another thing. I think his intentions are overall good, and he's navigating a kind of a difficult circumstance, that this is a very complex issue, and there's a lot of stakeholders that have good feelings and bad feelings about it. And I will note that as we're having this conversation here today, where I didn't invite a side of opposition here to talk from the landlord's perspective. And I didn't do that because I want to be, one-sided on this. I did it because I wanted to talk specifically about why this is an issue and why people should care about this. And I didn't want to make this into an argument about, you know, the future of investments versus housing for people. And I think this is a good medium to do that. And there's always time in the future to go on to the other side of it. But I just want to address that outright because I'm sure some people are already angry at me for being a propagandist. So
and that's OK. And I will add one agitation that I am constantly giving our council president. And that is when we have conversations and when we talk, there is a passion for housing, but he doesn't often show up publicly and speak to that. And I want to see more of that coming from him so that the people know that he is on their side.
So for a person like me, when he doesn't show up or come up or says what size he's on, it makes me feel like he's given the landlords an opportunity to raise the rent, to sell their property so they don't have to fix up because they know good cause is coming down the line. The dragging of his feet is a problem for people like me. And even doing this today or the interviews before, you see the nasty things that people say. It's, oh, well, she should just move out. The landlord owns the property, or just pay your rent on time. And I've had friends and family members go online and say, she's done all this. Like, have you not seen it? So when he doesn't stand there and say, I'm on the side of good cause, or I support it, or I'm trying to do what's best, it leaves a concern in my head that he is sitting in the middle, because it feels like he's just sitting there and it's like, okay, let me talk to the landlords. And then you have landlords and some of their ideals or their points or feelings is valid, but it's also one of those things. I'm just playing devil's advocate, because I can see, like, I'm a landlord. I want somebody out and I can't get them out because of all this is in place. But what some of those landlords are missing, because I see your face looking at me like, how can I take it? It's one of those things, like, I don't want to live next to someone that's a drug dealer, or there's always the police being called because someone's getting beat on or domestic violence. I don't want to live in that situation. So I've tried to tell some landlords who I'm friends with, like, you're still going to have the same rights. All I'm asking for is the basic right of, if you're going to tell me I have 30 days, why, when I help you pay your mortgage, or I'm paying my rent so you can pay your mortgage and you keep the upkeep, when there's something wrong in the house, I call you so it gets fixed immediately. If I feel like, you know, I can do it, I get permission to fix it first. So all those things are in there. But when President Miguel sits there and doesn't come out publicly to say, hey, I'm looking at it, I'm doing this, it leaves in my mind that he's playing both sides. Like, it's just what I feel personally. Like, there's no way you can go around it. I've asked privately, can you please tell me where you stand? Can you please come out and support me at the rally? Can you please say what side you're on? I'm not getting any of that. But during that time of from now on to back to June, 200 people and families have been evicted. Where was the support for them then? Then on top of that, the other thing is, you're saying this, but the rents have increased. And the things that I can afford is, like, I can give you addresses of people. There's a house on the west side that is $1,600. And it literally looks like a juke junk from the Color Purple. Like, it's bad.
A shack.
Worse than that.
And your objective perspective on this, considering what you are in the midst of now, is extremely admirable.
Thank you.
Let me say that.
We got a lot of calls coming in, and we've just got a couple minutes left. I want to take one of them. Quinn from Rochester. Hi, Quinn.
Hi there.
Hi. Go ahead.
Sure. So I'm a small business owner here in Rochester. I use the self-employment, unemployment assistance program for New York State. I've always been employed ever since I'm 27. I've been employed since I left college. And I'm now in a situation where I'm living with some friends because I can't afford a place to live. I'm working two part-time jobs, one at a farm, one with a small business. And, you know, every landlord wants me to pay or have income three times the rent, and I can't afford that. So I can't even apply for most apartments in Rochester. I haven't had a place to live in about 3-4 months. I always thought there'd be a system in place to help me with that. And project-based housing has waiting lists 3 to 4 years long that are not even a real waiting list. It's just a formality because of a legal thing they have to do. And so I just want to know, like, you know, Rochester needs to do something, because I'm just a person here working, I love this place. This is a city I've found to be home in the past 3 years, and I don't want to go anywhere else, but, you know, I can't stay if I don't have a place to live.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think that's not an uncommon story. I think there's a lot of people out there that are doing everything right and doing their best and still struggling to scrape by. I don't think it's a Rochester-specific story. I don't think it's a New York-specific story. I think this is everywhere. This is happening. But the question remains of what can be done here.
Bold, progressive legislation and leadership. Quinn, I feel your pain. And I think one of the things that we're going to need to do is move our elective and administrative leadership from the perspective of Rochester has an income problem more than we have a housing problem. That is a bunch of garbage. Quinn just mentioned it. He's working, what, 2-3 jobs and still has an issue paying the rent. We are in the midst of a housing crisis. I lost my son as a resident of Rochester because he moved on to Syracuse because he could find nothing here. Students who are graduating good jobs are leaving Rochester because they cannot find housing. We need bold, progressive legislation, but also we cannot say that housing is a priority and try and make people fit into these classes and racist systems that we have created. We have got to change some of these systems. If we want to create more home ownership, we have to address the unfair lending practices. We have to move people from a place where they are not a credit score, but if you can afford to pay rent, you can afford to pay a mortgage.
It's it seems like the city has for a long time tried to push for first-time home buyership, but the question is if enough has been done. But got 30 seconds left, Lisa. Can you tell us about what the tenant union is doing and what comes next for you guys?
Yeah, so we would encourage anyone who's in support of this legislation to turn out to speak to council on November 14th at 6 p.m. And to check out our website at rocktenantunion.org/goodcause to get involved in the fight. We need you and we need all of us.
And Keisha, with 15 seconds left, what are you hoping for in court a couple weeks?
I'm hoping that they see that this looks more like a retaliation greed thing than I was an unfit tenant, because I wasn't.
Awesome. Well, thank you all.
Thanks. Thank you, Gina.